Okay, since we're all here, so I start. So from now on, we look at specific mental activities, mental events, and especially the ones which have of ethical relevance. So I'm going to start with talking about the first, in the list of the 11 positive mental events, I'm going to talk about the first three and their negative counterparts. Yeah? So Shraddha, Ri, and Apatrapya. Yeah? So faith, and then Ri has different translations. Sometimes called shame. So, starting with Shraddha. So Shraddha, or faith, is our response to values. Yeah. So our response to the highest good. So sometimes it's called the highest in us responding to the highest in the universe. So it's our sort of whole being responding to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. The definition in Know Your Mind, or the definition from Mind and Buddhist Psychology, is it is a deep conviction, lucidity, and longing for those things which are real, have value, and are possible. It functions as the basis of sustained interest. So the first sentence is sort of, to sort of unpack it, it is a deep conviction for things which are real, lucidity for things which have value, and longing for things which are real, or which are possible, sorry, for which are possible. So these are the three aspects of Shraddha, and I just want to talk a bit about those. So I changed the order slightly. I start with the second one. So a lucidity for things which have value. So it's our emotional response to the ideal, to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Yeah. So it's a sort of, it's more, you could say it's the emotional aspect of Shraddha. Yeah. It's the enjoyment of the ideal, the enjoyment of the Buddha. Yeah. It's the feeling you sort of, you get, the feeling which emerges when you contemplate the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, especially the Buddha. Yeah. It's sort of uplifting, it's lucid. Yeah. And it's also strongly connected to gratitude. Yeah. So it's sort of the sense is highly pleasurable, it's uplifting. I think the whole feeling tone is one of uplift, yeah, and joy. That's the first one. The second is a deep conviction about things which are real. That's in a sense more the, let's call it, rational is not quite the right term, but something like that. It's a more rational aspect of faith. A more conceptual aspect of faith. The object of that conviction is traditionally the law of karma. So you have deep conviction that the law of karma is true. And I think it's deep conviction. It's not just sort of superficial agreement. It's a deep conviction about the truth of the law of karma. And the third kind of faith is the, what do you call it? Longing for things which are possible. That's a longing faith. In a sense, the object in a certain way is oneself. Well, not in the sense of having self-confidence. It's more you want the ideal. You long for the ideal. Yeah? So in a way, in this we'll call it definition or description of Shraddha, we have a response to the ideal, we have a response to the path, and we have our own response to ourselves. Yeah? So the person is involved, we ourselves, the path, the practices, and the goal. So there is something complete in Shraddha, it's our whole being involved. Yeah? So Shraddha is not just feeling. Yeah? It's our whole being is involved in Shraddha. And I think it's obvious to see that if you play around with it and try to imagine if one of them is missing. Yeah? So you may have strong feelings for the Buddha, You may be convinced of the law of karma, but you don't really want it. Yeah? Then so what? Yeah? You don't have a strong feeling yourself, or you don't miss it. Yeah? You long for it. Yeah? Or you may have strong feelings for the Buddha. You really want to get there. You really want enlightenment, but you don't have faith in the practices, and you don't believe in the law of karma. That doesn't work either. Yeah? So all three have to be there for Shraddha to be complete. And they have a different, I mean, there's a way I can recommend to try it out reflecting on this, yeah? So what you may want to try out, either before meditation or maybe tomorrow morning in the quiet period, just spend some time reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha and see what that feels like. Then spend some time reflecting on the law of karma, actions have consequences, and see what that feels like. And then try to get into contact with the longing for the ideal, yeah? I think the longing for the ideal is almost you suffer from not being enlightened. I think that's what it basically is. Yeah. So the first one, when I do it sometimes, I meditate on Shraddha, the first one is more uplifting, yeah, the ideal. The second is more grounding, so you're so sobered in a way. And the third one is more, it's actually quite, in a funny way, unpleasant, because you suffer from the absence of the Buddha. Yeah. There's, I think, almost an element of dukkha involved in it. An element of dukkha and Shraddha, and the longing Shraddha. So you long for the teacher, you long for the Buddha, you long for enlightenment, and you're painfully aware of its absence. Yeah? You notice, you feel the absence of enlightenment in you. And the third one I find quite interesting, because it sort of, it adds more bite to the feeling of Shraddha. Yeah? So if you only have the first two ones, you're really excited about the Buddha and it's great, and you think the Dharma is wonderful, but a certain bite is missing because you don't suffer enough from not being enlightened yourself. And something is missing. It's a bit like doing the metta bhavana without the enemy stage. It's easy and pleasant, but something is missing. Yeah? And developing Shraddha without the longing and the yearning, it's nice and pleasant, but something is missing. Yeah? So these are the three kinds of Shraddha. Yeah, and that's sort of, yeah, they make it complete. I find this a very useful list, but just to mention, there's a certain shortcoming in lists, which is we can take them almost too literal or too seriously. And just to sort of broaden things out a bit, there are other aspects of faith which are sometimes mentioned, which are mentioned in certain sources. So it's good to have, so this list is very useful. I find the three lists very useful and helpful, but I think if you're too excited by lists, you sort of narrow things down a bit. Yeah, you may be good in discussing faith, but you may not be a faithful person, see what I mean. Yeah? Or you may be very good in understanding what faith is, but you may not actually have it. So just to broaden things out a bit, I mentioned two more aspects of faith, or two kinds of faith, which I found in some sources. There is one text which talks about one-pointed faith. So it's almost, you're extremely focused on the ideal. And in this sense, faith is very integrating. Yeah. I think when we think about integration, we usually think of integrating around ourselves, the body and feeling. But in a sense, integrating us around our ideal is almost more helpful for most of us. Yeah. So it's a one-pointedness in faith. Yeah. Almost a sense of you getting absorbed in thinking about the Buddha. It becomes an object of absorption. And another aspect, another kind of faith, I'll just mention it because it's quite fun, is fierce faith, almost wrathful faith. It's mentioned in Vajrayana often, or sometimes. Yeah. It's almost sort of, it's a faith which makes you loyal to your teacher and is going to protect him. It's that kind of faith. Yeah. It's a faith which is loyal to your teacher. Yeah, so I think it's good to just bear in mind, okay, there's faith, there's Shraddha, that's a different, three different traditional aspects, but I think there's more to it. So it's good not to get too, I mean, there's a danger of getting too technical about Shraddha if you have a list of subheadings. Yeah. But at the same time, I find this list very useful to work with. Yeah. So the lucid faith, which is sort of more the uplift, the gratitude connected with it, the sort of the brightness of the mind, mind's bright, flexible, enjoyable. Then you've got the reflect on karma, the deep faith, which is more grounding, actions have consequences. It's more like a deep conviction. You're deeply convinced about the truth of this. Yeah? And the third one is the longing, the yearning for the Buddha, or the yearning for enlightenment. Well, I think it's actually something like a sense of dukkha in it. I think it is because of you suffer from the absence of the Buddha if you really long for him. You find a lot of that in the songs of Milarepa when he misses his teacher. It's showing the longing phase there. The opposite of faith is ashradhya, lack of faith, which is not just a lack of faith, but it's not just the absence of faith, it's almost of willful not being faithful. It's almost a willful activity. So ashradhya as a negative or unskillful mental event is not the feeling of I don't have enough faith, but it's more the activity of actively going against faith. It's ashradhya. Yeah? You can call it being lazy with respect to positive things. A certain laziness. Yeah? It's also a certain dullness, and especially it turns into cynicism. I think cynicism is basically ashradhya. Yeah? So cynicism is lack of, is active, it's not just lack of faith, it's actually active anti-faith. Yeah? Any cynical ideas we get about the goal or the people, yeah? So that's on faith. And as I said, I can really recommend that, as it's almost meditation, to just spend some time reflecting on the Buddha or a Bodhisattva who inspires you, and just notice your response. Yeah? And see, look for qualities of uplift, lightness of the mind, brightness, yeah? So, of enjoyment. Yeah? Then you reflect on the law of karma, actions have consequences, and see what that feels like. Yeah? And then you bring yourself in, the volition, the longing for it, and see what that feels like. So I find it quite interesting. It's actually a way of starting meditation, quite a good way of beginning a meditation. In a way, we're actually doing that in the Tirasana Vandana. You don't notice it. But the text of the Tirasana Vandana is actually a meditation on the qualities of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So when you find in the Pali Canon, when it's recommended to meditate on the qualities of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, you find the text of the Tirasana Vandana in it. Okay, try it out, just sort of reflect on the three different aspects of faith. And if you reflect, keep it simple, especially about karma, yeah? Don't go into complicated ideas, just actions have consequences. We are the result of our actions, just stay with it. Interesting, often karma is almost talked about as a threat. Yeah, sort of. But actually, it's if you reflect on karma, think it's also very positive teaching. Yeah? Often karma is brought up and sort of going to be punished. Yeah? But actually it means that you can do something with your life. That's what karma means. So it's a very positive teaching. So that's Shraddha. The next two, Hri and Apatrapya, they often come together. So Hri, Subhuti translates as scrupulousness. In Know Your Mind, Bhante translates as self-respect or shame. I personally like the terms regret and remorse. It's basically one's personal conscience triggered by one's own ethical sensitivity. So it's the unpleasant feeling we're getting into when we realize we have done something unethical. Yeah. It's the unpleasant feeling which emerges when we haven't really lived up to our own ideal. Yeah. So when we realize we've done something unethical, when we realize we harmed somebody, for example, or we haven't been as ethical as we could have been. I find them quite interesting that these are connected to Shraddha, because if you have an ideal and you have a connection to the ideal and you want the ideal and the ideal is important, you can't avoid feeling shame, because you will, of course, fall short of the ideal. Of course, you can't avoid falling short of it. Yeah? So Hri is the aspect of the two, which is about, you've done, in a sense, you realize you've acted unethically, you harmed another person. Yeah? or you haven't been as good as you could have been, and then you feel bad about it. And that's a positive mental event. So it's important to distinguish between positive mental events and pleasant mental events. I mean, it's really important to distinguish those. Yeah? I mean, certain mental events are pleasant but not skillful, like the enjoyment of seeing somebody slipping over a banana peel, which may be fun but not skillful. Yeah? Some things are skillful but unpleasant, like shame. Yeah, or he. Actually, compassion can be a bit unpleasant as well sometimes. So to do this, we have to have the ability to feel bad about what we have done. We have to be sort of robust enough to feel bad about ourselves. So, apatrapya is it's the same kind of ethical awareness, but in a sense, the trigger is other people. Subhuti called it reverential shame. It's also called decorum, respect for the wise, and one text, one word I found, embarrassment. Yeah, it's a sort of uneasy feeling you have when sort of you've done something, or if you are about to do something which you wish your spiritual friends shouldn't know. That's the feeling. Yeah, so if they knew it, you would be embarrassed. Not because they're authorities or anything. We'll talk about authority in a moment. But just if they're your friends, they have values and they have trust in you. And it's also based on the fact that your friends have trust in you, and you don't want to let them down. It's more social one. So chi is more personal. It's your own inner personal compass. Apatrapya is more social. And they are not only important for the Buddhist life, they're actually important for any decent human society. They are sometimes called the protectors of the world. They're the protectors of society. So if you don't have any moral shame, it's almost impossible to lead a human life. Yeah. Now, just to bring in another area here, it's the, hang on, we'll bring it in here or later. Oh no, bring it later. So the opposites of those, Ahikya and Anapatrapya, so the opposite of Ri and the opposite of Apatrapya, it's a lack of personal conscience. Subhuti calls it a sneaking pride in breaking the rules, or a mood of moral rebellion. Yeah, so if you want to rebel against conventional morality, so you get drunk and think you're too individual.
What was that state?
Ahikya anapatrapya, so the opposite. Yeah, it's a mood of moral rebellion. You want to rebel against evil society and all its rules, so you act unethical and then you're really free. I think when all of us in this room are a bit too old for this. Grow up. I mean, you can rebel when you're 15 or so, yeah, but at some point, yeah, you're too old for this. Yeah, the sneaking pride in breaking the rules, I quite like that. So there is this frightening issue of irrational guilt. I just want to bring that up a bit, talk about irrational guilt. So Bhante makes in the talk on confession from the Sutra of Gordon Light series, he talks about the difference between the healthy shame or remorse and irrational guilt, because he says confession should be without guilt. And guilt he defines as sort of fear of authority, basically. Yeah. Irrational fear of authority. I think that's a good distinction. In some ways, it's a very helpful distinction. But I wonder whether many of us are a bit too scared of it. Yeah, it's sometimes in discussions on ethics and confession, irrational guilt is this really, really horrible thing you really, really have to avoid. And I was talking to some people some time ago, and they were thinking of doing confession in their Going for Refuge group, and they didn't want to start confessing unless they sorted out their irrational guilt. I don't think it works like that. I don't actually think irrational guilt is such a problem. Maybe the problem is more that we worry too much about it. It's a useful distinction. It's a very useful distinction to make. Yeah? Is there something irrational in my feeling of shame or guilt? And to what extent is it rational and skillful? It's a very helpful distinction, but we shouldn't get too anxious about it. I think the anxiety about irrational guilt may be worse than the actual irrational guilt itself. Yeah? We're not going to die or anything. We're not going to go mad because we're irrational in our guilt. So I wouldn't worry, in practical terms, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Yeah? I think we're more robust than we think. Yeah, we're not that fragile. But there is this thing of irrational guilt and there's sometimes enormous fear of it. It's like sort of Satan and his legions break loose when irrational guilt comes up. But I think it's less harmful than we think. So we just engage with it, we confess, and then it sorts itself out. And there will be something irrational guilt in our feelings of shame. It will be there. So we just sort it out and not worry too much about it. So that. So just as on Chi and Apatrapia, so they're mental events, obviously, but the best way of practicing them is by confessing. I mean, I think part of training in the Dharma, in Buddhism, is, well, we have we have retreats on ethics, the 10 pillars, and we need to train ourselves in ethics. It's an important part of our training. And training in ethics, I think there's a number of aspects to it. One is learning to understand what is ethical and what isn't, like which actions are ethical, which actions are unethical. That's important to learn. But I think there's another way of learning ethics, and that is learning the principles behind ethics, the views behind ethics. Yeah, and that's to do with confessing. Why is something unskillful? Yeah? And part of the training is learning to confess. Yeah. Learning how to make a confession. Also, when we act unethical, we have harmed another person. It's not just about us. Yeah? Usually, it's also we harmed another person. So part of the feeling of shame is you want to re-establish good contact with the person. Yeah? It's also quite important. So part of confessing is actually re-establishing contact or repairing any damage you've done. One thing to train in confession, I find it interesting doing retreats on 10 pillars where we do our ethical life stories and it's very confessional. It's almost there's sort of two extremes of shame or regret. One is you over-identify and one is you under-identify, if that word exists. So it might be interesting just to sort of try to find out where you stand in that spectrum. So if you over-identify, you've done something unethical in the past, you completely identify with it, and that is you. You've done this terrible thing in the past, and you live a life of penance. And your whole life has to be penance for this horrible act you've done in the past. That's over-identifying. It's not helpful. Yeah? I think it's also the under-identifying. That doesn't really exist, the word, but it works. It's sort of, yeah, that was a few years ago. That's not really me anymore. I've changed. Yeah, you sort of don't take it. It's a bit, one is we have too much responsibility, one too little responsibility. Yeah. I sometimes get a sense that's an issue we work with when we do our ethical life stories instead of any bad things we've done in the past. Yeah, so either we over-identify with it, which means our whole life is overshadowed by this horrible black deed in our past and sort of we have lived a life of penance. And the other ones you under-identify with it. That was a few years ago. I'm a changed person now. Nothing to do with me. Yeah. Which of all, you have done it. So, yeah. So there's different ways in which we have to practice this and train ourselves in this. So anymore. See. Yeah, so the feeling of Chi and Apatrapia, and Subhuti says in his talks about them, not sure if it's in the book, of the two, he thinks Apatrapia is more important because we're social beings. So Apatrapia is the one with respect for the wise. Yeah? And because we're social beings, we're probably more likely to control ourselves in the face of other people rather than if you're alone. Yeah? Okay, we have our inner moral compass, which tells us what to do and what not to do, but it's more likely that actually in the presence of other people we behave better. Yeah. Because we're social beings. Another thought, I've forgotten what was it to bring up. Oh yeah, I think it's related to the irrational guilt thing. It's, sochi means we feel bad about something we've done which was unethical and we could have done better. And to do this, I think part of the training is requires a realistic view of ourselves. From an absolute point of view, we are probably most of the time in a mildly unskillful state. Or we could do better anytime. Yeah? What I mean is it's inappropriate to feel guilty, even in a rational way, about things which realistically speaking you can't really change. Yeah? So we can always be more generous in life. Of course we can always be more generous. But we can't confess every day that we haven't given enough. You see what I mean? Yeah? So in any of the precepts we could be much better all the time. Yeah? But that doesn't mean we have to confess everything all the time. It gets a bit unpractical. It becomes actually meaningless. Yeah? It becomes quite meaningless, confession. So the skill or the training in Chi and Apatrapia, in ethics and remorse, is to really be clear when you've done something which was unskillful. Could I realistically speaking, taking into account my personality, the kind of person I am now, could I have done better? Yeah? So you measure yourself against something which is possible and not against some impossible ideal, which means you're going to fall short all the time. Yeah? But then confessing becomes meaningless because your life is a constant confessing of things. Yeah? Yeah. So there's these various areas to explore. So just to sum up and finish off. So we have the three first mental events, the first three positive and the negative counterparts. In a sense, they're the foundation. And they hang together. Yeah. So the first one is Shraddha. And as I said, I suggest that in reflection, you just try out these different kinds of Shraddha in reflection. Yeah. The ideal, the joy of the ideal, the truth of karma, and the longing for the ideal. Yeah. Let's see what they feel like. See whether some of them you find easier to access than others. And then we've got Chi and Apatrapia, so areas to explore is I'm too scared of irrational guilt. Yeah. Is it really that bad? Another thing to explore is, do I set up in my life opportunities to confess? I think that's another important one. Because I don't actually think we can train in ethics properly without a regular practice of confession. It's very limited. I think it's sort of my experience of it. Yeah? That's when I know I'm sort of encouraged to confess every week, I'm much more aware of my ethics. Because left to my own device, I just would sort of not bother probably about ethics. So do I set up the conditions to train Chi and Apatrapia? So there's a few things to explore. Okay, so that's on those three mental events. So we'll put her in half an hour. Okay, thanks.